Okay, thank you. Good afternoon. This is the Design Commission. I'd like to begin by introducing first the Bureau of Development Services staff who are here. They included Kara Pirvanti and actually from PBOT, Kurt is here. Welcome. The members of the commission here today are myself, Gwen Milius, the chair, Commissioner David Keltner, Commissioner Tad Savinar, Commissioner Jane Hansen, and Commissioner Jeff Simpson. Commission members are private citizens appointed by the mayor to provide review of new construction or remodeling of projects within designated design zones. We are not paid but serve entirely as volunteers. More detailed information regarding the purpose and function of the commission can be found in the Portland Zoning Code. Commission members must declare a conflict of interest, bias, or ex parte contact prior to the staff presentation of a particular case. If a commission member has a conflict of interest or bias, they are not allowed to participate in commission discussion or voting on that project. If a commission member has had an ex parte contact, they must declare the substance of it on the record, and it is subject to rebuttal. We have a mixed bag of hearing cases today. We have a briefing, a type 2 appeal, and a type 3. I'm going to just move ahead into the briefing now, and then I'll read the type 2 and type 3 procedure in after this. Cool. So welcome. Thank you for being here today. Our first case is a briefing on the draft code guide prepared by staff from Portland Transportation to address private vaults in the city right-of-way. Okay.
Hi. I'm going to give you a couple opening comments and then hand it off to PBOT, if that sounds okay. We're here because PBOT is contemplating changes to their policies to private vaults in the public right-of-way. This is a briefing, as Gwen said, so your role is advisory. You can comment on anything that you hear today. Our goal from a design review perspective for BDS, taking into account our design guidelines and our ground level zoning code standards, is to find a way to continue to easily allow private vaults underground in the right-of-way. Let's see. So a few months ago, word kind of got out that policy changes were happening, and I think a couple projects even felt like they were told they needed to move their vaults into the right-of-way. I gave you a couple examples. It's these two plans here, just to show you some pretty, I think, bad repercussions. One is showing the vaults moving from underground in the right-of-way to a pad mounted between the building and the sidewalk. The other shows the vaults at ground level in the building, but at the street face, so kind of taking away some important space that should be given to active spaces like we are encouraged to do through our standards and guidelines. So those are two examples that kind of heightened this to an issue we'd like to take to you today. What we'd like your input on is ways for PBOT to maintain the right-of-way underground as a viable and preferred location. Preferred meaning that it's readily acceptable solution for all projects. Viable meaning that it's not too burdensome to do or too expensive so that a developer chooses to put these in the building instead of putting retail or active uses at the ground level. The other thing that we'd like your input on today is the surface materials of vault lids. PBOT's presentation, you're going to see a few examples of lids, some that are of the surface of the, or mimic the surface of the walking surface surrounding the vaults. The other is metal vault lids. Our preferred location is that it's seamless with the walking surface of the sidewalk. We'd like your input on that. And then, obviously, anything else you want to weigh in on.
Okay. Commissioner Wark has joined us. So, do you guys have a PowerPoint that you want to walk through? Are there questions of Kara before we get started? Okay, go ahead.
So, good afternoon, Commissioners and Chairperson. I'm Christine Leon, and I manage the Portland Bureau of Transportation's Development and Street Systems Management Division. And we're here truly for design input. I know it's sometimes hard to believe that we come here by choice, but we have a design issue that affects both the right-of-way and the front of buildings that also affect the pedestrians' environments. Kurt Krueger, as you know, manages the Development Division and Building Plan Review of PBOT, and Alex Bajorano, who I think is a new face to you, he manages within the division the utility permitting. So the public right-of-way has many uses, the movement of goods and people in addition to accommodating utilities. And what we have is a need to rethink how we accommodate utilities in our environment that serve the needs of property. Everything from underground vaults and the size of these vaults that are necessary to accommodate all the things that people like PGE and PP&L or even the gas company may need, in addition to poles. So there's two things that we're looking for right now. We have an administrative rule that allows our guidance to permit such things in the right-of-way. But what we want to do is change some of those rules so that we have early engagement on building development with utilities. And that will allow the city to weigh in as early as possible and practical on the location and the sizing of utilities. So we're proposing that we have a site plan that shows, again, as early as possible in the development of a building's design, the proposed locations of utilities. So that's one thing. The other thing that we are wanting to do is really enforce something that we've had in code, and I believe PGE has in their tariff agreement, and we may have other utilities have in their franchise agreement with the city, is the ability to place vaults for private services in the right-of-way versus private property. And so what we're proposing is to have rules that specifically address where, when, and how an underground vault can be placed in the right-of-way to accommodate a single building's use, which we really say is a private use. So those are the two things that we have before you today. Alex is going to go through some slides to show more of the context. And he has a few slides that actually represent the proposed language in our admin rule, and then some slides that show building facades and how things can be accommodated. PGE is also here, and they've been working with us on these rules, and Alex can speak to the comments that we've received from PGE and other utilities. We realize, too, that this is not necessarily a perfect solution, but what we want to hear back from you is some advice so we can move forward. So hope that's helpful to frame the context.
Can I ask you, what's the problem you're trying to solve again? I mean, it's just not really clear. What's the problem?
Do you want to get into the slides to kind of show?
So
the problem is that there's so many competing uses of the right-of-way, particularly the sidewalk area, that we just don't have space for all the utilities that are going in. And the vaults that are needed to accommodate transformers to serve private property, for example, take up a huge amount of space. We don't see them in PBOT until the building is pretty much designed and they're coming in for their final stages of building permit issuance. So it's really too late in the game for PBOT to influence the design of this or the location of it. We have rules that say these vaults need to be accommodated in the furnishing zone. So remember, the sidewalk corridor is made up of the furnishing zone, the sidewalk through zone, and then the building frontage zone. But they're so large that they take up space into and encroach into the building, into the pedestrian through zone, and they also preclude the ability for other utilities to go and use that corridor. So that's what we are trying to address, is what is the appropriate placement and accommodation of utilities in the right-of-way for private use. The other issue is, again, related to poles and whatnot and how they are their placement and encroachments from buildings may affect a pool. And the classic example is a balcony projection, say, from a building gets too close to a pole, and what do we do there? So to have early engagement with the utility company and the city and the architect to try to resolve those issues early and not at building permit issuance or utility permit issuance. Does that help, Lee?
Yeah, I didn't hear a real problem. Maybe I'm missing something.
I think some of the photos that will...
Is there a danger to pedestrians somewhere?
Well, what happens in the instance of the pole is it pretty much forces... That's part of it, right. We're talking about all utilities, right? In the instance of a pole, what it does is it forces a lot of times the utility to relocate, and there's not a good spot for them to relocate. They're just, frankly, out of room. As far as the vaults, this is where the photos and the slides will help to show whether or not we as a city want to continue to have the lids and the vents and the associated appurtenances in the sidewalk, and to get your perspective as to whether or not it degrades or changes the pedestrian environment or not. Because we're thinking it does, but if from your perspective it's fine, then that's one of the things that we want to be able to accommodate when we write our rules.
I'll just add just a little bit. Kurt Kruger, for the record, PBOT. Of course, the last 10 years, we've seen vault sizes get bigger and bigger, and I can't speak to exactly why that is, but they're growing on us. And about 2003, 2004, BES made a conscientious decision to do surface stormwater treatments. And so we're seeing swales and planter boxes popping up. And those are, again, something that consume a large amount of public right-of-way space. So when we get down to the engineering, and I know this topic's about as sexy as loading spaces for you guys, but it's the reality that we have to deal with when the building permit comes in. And what we're forced to do when we're reviewing the engineering plans is work around these large vaults. So that means removing street trees where we would like to have six or seven per block. We're down to four or five. And so we're changing the design, the character of that street because we're having to work around those vaults. It limits our ability to do things in the future. So, for example, when the bus mall project came in, we wanted to put catenary poles in for the new light rail. That ended up with a cost for us to come in and remove or relocate vaults to put those things in. So I don't have to tell you guys we're dealing with small block sizes in the city, and the competing space, we're not quite at the perfect storm, but we're seeing a perfect storm of so many things wanting to converge into this small space, and so we're trying to get ahead of that a little bit as we're seeing that space be so competitive.
I guess just to follow up on that, though, if you're saying that you want all the vaults to move to the furnishing zone, that's also the tree zone. Mm-hmm. So if all the vaults are moving in, that's going to take out more trees than you're in the pedestrian zone. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe there's specifics of the rule that we're changing. A lot of the rule we're not changing, so we're still going to allow the vaults to be in the public right-of-way. The location for those today is in the furnishing zone, but what I think we're really focusing on for this change is the private use of the right-of-way to accommodate vaults and things that are going in the vault. So some of the questions might be answered if Alex can kind of get into it.
Sure. Thank you. Alex Bejarano, Transportation. I manage utilities and inspection, as was stated earlier. One of the last slides, the very last slide, Kara, it's not in your packet. I just brought it for reference. If you can snake to that really quick.
Go to the end. Yeah.
Go to the end. Oh, sorry. Sure. But what we have is something that you've seen recently, actually. It's a project that on Block 43 and down in South Waterfront, and we were looking at, you were looking at it for a different reason in the sense of the entryways and to meet exactly that one there. So I don't know if you can bring that up a little bit more. But this came before you, I think, and Chris can jump in here, is that there were entryways coming out onto Abernathy there, and you had some recommendations of how that should be handled. At that point, this utility vault we see on the corner there, that was shown on that plan. And at that point, they came to us for a permit for that. We pushed them back and said, well, that's a utility vault. And so what happened was when we engaged with PGE, PGE had not been consulted at this time. And when they looked at this vault, they said, for what your building needs are, you'll have at least this vault plus another vault and potentially even another vault on top of that because there was no early engagement. So that's really what the heart of this issue is. We're trying to get to that early engagement so that whatever needs to be made in the right-of-way or on property, that that conversation can happen early. And that, and so that's an example that is real life that we're having right now. So now if we can jump back to the beginning, sorry. Right, you're currently looking at it, sorry. So, you know, why we're here is we have these large vaults in the right-of-way that, you know, have lids, and they, some in cases they serve, they're a transmission vault, so they serve multiple properties, which is allowed under the franchise agreements. And then we also have others where they're just exclusive for this, that adjacent development. So if we can just kind of scroll through. These are just examples of vaults and venting within the sidewalk, within the pedestrian through zone that we see encroaching all over the city.
Are the ones with the roses on them ours?
They either PGE or, yeah, exactly, Water Bureau.
Belong to all of us? Okay, yeah.
Exactly.
Okay.
So these are just multiple examples of, you know, these vaults that have over time just come there. What we're looking at today is really, you have a copy of it in front of you. It's that Transportation Rule 1019, which regulates or gives us our rules of utility permits in the right-of-way. And we're making some, two changes to that. Really, we're saying in early on, we want that early engagement. And in talking to staff, both in PBOT and BDS and others, you know, we've landed on requiring that early in the design historic review process to see if we can get that conversation going at that point. And the other part of the change to the administrative rule is really modifying the section for vaults. Currently, our rule is based upon placement of public utilities, meaning the franchise utilities or water and BES, those facilities, and not the use of private. So we're not privatizing the right-of-way. We don't have that in our rule of how we would administer and write a permit for somebody to do that. Currently, right now, the utility companies pull that permit, and it's under their responsibility then to own and maintain that vault. And so we're defining that a little bit better. So we're saying, if whose vault is it, who should be maintaining it, who should own that vault? And that's what we're carving the rule up here. The site utility plan, which is the highlighted piece on the one document, is really for new construction or significant alteration. And we're saying in the rule we'd like it for to be required that a design or historic resource review that they would submit a site utility plan no later than the land use application, so very early engagement. And if there is not those two designations, then you would still submit a site utility plan, but no later than the building permit application. So we know those conversations are occurring. And that's the heart of the rule, really. The next slide really says the little more nuts and bolts of we want to identify if it's a type 1 or type 2, and I'll get into that later, but really the type 1 is a regular transmission utility-owned vault, where a type 2 is a private vault. So we want that. We want to understand what conversations have happened and what those conversations are relating to in terms of private or public use. We'd like to see the utility contacts that have been done so that if we have a question later on as we move through the process, we can engage with those individuals. The utility companies are big organizations. This is us. It's nice to be able to point to that specific contact and bring them into the conversation. And then really the site utility plan will address how those buildings are being served for those public and private utilities. This is just a mock-up we did of a site utility plan. You know, the intent here is really the early engagement and to try to understand where those utilities are coming in to serve the building. I mean, is it anticipated on the developing property to be part of the development inside the building, or are we planning to put it outside? If we can have early engagement, then we can understand what the impacts of the right-of-way are going to be, if there are conflicts with other projects or you know, any other permits that are out there, we can try to identify and modify or head off those conflicts at an early stage.
If I can just interrupt here, and this is it's probably an underground district. There's a lot of areas in the city that are not an underground district, so it would show poles and other things rather than a vault.
Right. So in terms of the site utility plan for poles, we've had for at least a couple years, we've had conversations with BDS about and the utility companies where, as Christine said earlier, a building has come in, it's designed, and it's submitted, and at the 11th hour, we see a pole, and then you have these balcony conflicts. And there are serious conflicts. We've had many conversations with PGE and PP&L on how we can modify that. We've done some outreach in the early assistance stages where we provide them with information saying, you know, look up, consider this when you're designing. We still have the issue occurring. This is another way to try to get that early engagement so we can handle that early on, where if a design needs to be modified either on the utility side or on the private development side, it can be done without a large cost to that modification.
Quickly to that, a lot of times that overhead utility conflict is identified as the building's under construction. That's when PGE is finally engaged and the actual utilities are finally narrowed down, and that's a very expensive time to add a $100,000 bill to a project after the performance is completely done, the building's under construction, and lo and behold, that overhead line now needs to be buried and put underground. That's not a conversation any of us wants to have with a developer or an architect as the building's starting to come out of the ground.
Yeah, and I will add, too, that it's by no fault of PGE that they're engaged late. I know that the downtown team, they're sitting right over there. They go and scour through the land use applications and try to make early engagement with architects. So they try to get those early conversations. So we're trying to look for the sweet spot to allow for some design and accommodation, but not too early, but not too late.
I do, just for the rest of the commission's information, I have one yellow card here for testimony for this particular briefing. So if you guys have further presentation, like to continue with it. If we have questions, let's go for it. But I also want to just let everyone know that we'll need to slip this in before we deliberate. So,
sure. We do have a little bit more. We've talked about the site plan. Now we're moving into the vault types. I talked about the type 1 and type 2. And that's really, type 1 is a transmission vault, standard vault that we have all through the city. We're not really changing the processes or requirements there. That seems to be working well. We're really trying to carve this off to say, you know, is it a transmission line or vault, or is it for the private use of individual property owner? And so we're talking about what are the requirements for all of those. The type one, again, like I say, is your normal vault that you see for PGE, PP&L, others, and it's for the transmission and distribution of their system. What we are carving out here a little bit is creating a hierarchy of where those vaults should be placed. So should they be placed in the street or on the sidewalk? And if they're in the sidewalk, where should they should be in that sidewalk, you know, in the furnishing zone as much as possible. And the last criteria would be if it has to encroach into the pedestrian through zone, that's the very last end of this. So it just lists that. Here we have some just examples of transmission vaults. These have, the lift-out slabs that have been modified to match the existing sidewalk areas. The type 2 vaults is really the new piece of our administrative rule. Again, from PBOT's perspective, we prefer these to be, you know, handled some other place other than the right-of-way, but we understand and we're sensitive to that. If that's a location they would want to be placed, what rules and regulations should we have for that? And that's really what this does. We're not saying no, we're just saying, if you do this, here's the process that we will follow. And they have to meet the general requirements of any other vault, the transmission vaults as well. But in addition to that, we ask the applicant, the property owner, provide justification in the form of a design exception, you know, because it's not the normal case to be placed there. We would like to put this out in the sidewalk pedestrian through zone or in the sidewalk area anywhere. And then a letter from the utility in support of that location. Not so much as justification in terms of why they have to have it out there, but we want to make sure the utility has been engaged to say, we can serve you at that location where you want to have that. And so that's why the letter of support, we'd like to have that there. So we have all the players in that conversation at one time. Next slide. We're asking that the type 2 vaults be located immediately adjacent to the property, which is very similar to if you had a class A type of vault, which is a structural component of the vault. So we want that the loading of the vault to be of that so it can withstand the loading it would be if it was part of the building, and to also have a lift-out slab matching the existing sidewalk type. So it'd be a brick facade or concrete or what have you. We'll permit the utility, the infrastructure leading up into it, so the utility lines, the power lines going into the vault will be the utility's responsibility. But then the applicant itself will receive a lease for the vault, because now we've privatized that area and it becomes their for their use in there. And then we're working on the lease being some method of based upon market value. So we're working on that methodology right now, but there'll be some reductions in there based upon what part of town will be based specific on that area that the vault be placed in. We have some, so in that example we saw earlier on the site plan, we just kind of mocked this up. You know, this is the area that we'd be talking about, the leased area. So, you know, the vault itself, the venting for the vault, what have you, those areas would then become the privatized area of the right-of-way. And so that would be the leased area that we're talking about. You know, here's some just examples of those. This is a large vault here, adjacent to the building, serving the building. And then from our perspective, I mean, we've seen this before, and in consultation with utilities, this works very well for them. We understand that it doesn't work in a lot of cases because, as Kara said earlier, you know, there is this loss of life, if you will, in the building because you have this facade. This one has even a facade in front of that. So if you open, go to the next slide, behind there is the utility access doors and what have you. And then you have the next slide is really more utilitarian, which is just, you know, your basic doors with no facade in front of it. And so, go on, next slide. So we have other, you know, these are the concrete lift-out slabs that we've talked about that are potential that, you know, you can move those out. They match in. They blend in. You don't even see them as you're walking down the street. There's no loss of, you know, material where you're kind of afraid and you step around these. There's another example here. You know, this one actually has multiple surfaces in there to really match that pattern, that look of, you know, the existing surrounding area. So that's really nicely done here.
So is that an example of a vault that has a manhole, a smaller
manhole? Right. The square there and the gray brick is an access way, whereas the larger piece is the vault itself. Exactly. And that's it. Big sigh. Sorry.
Well, other questions, I guess, of the presenter before I ask
a question. Just in terms of, you mentioned a design exception. What's the process for design exception?
There's a form to fill out, and basically, you know, anytime it's something doesn't meet our standards and somebody's requesting something outside of those standards, we'll ask for a design exception, be it placement of a pole from a utility in the wrong location. In this case, it would be for privatizing the right-of-way, if you will. And so it's an online form that we fill out or have the applicant fill out and submit to us with the rationale of why they want that there.
Yeah, and they're based on requests for technical design deviations from our standards. It's different from, say, our public works appeal process, which captures the entire kind of scope of the cross-section of the right-of-way. But these are purely technical questions. So it's a internal process of review and approval where we get PBOT or say BES or BDS, even subject matter expert, to weigh in on some of these, but the burden of the proof or the argument is on the applicant.
So, I already said this, but what are the other potential utilities that would potentially be in conflict with the private vaults and
landlord? Well, we have any franchise utility has the right to be anywhere within the public right-of-way. And so as we talk about competing uses of the right-of-way with these swales and what have you, it just shrinks that area. So any utility could run down the sidewalk area, but then if this vault is there, now they have to, that running line is no longer available to them. So they would either have to jog around that, potentially go over the top of it or under very deep, which can be more expensive, or go into the street area, which is preferred in some location or some instances, but at the same time it creates a, in the long term, you have access issues because people are trying to get in the middle of traffic, and so you have other impacts there.
Okay. A lot of buildings
downtown have actually their basements go up, extend underneath the sidewalk. So what's the situation with that? It's already privatized below the right of way. And in fact, I think with new buildings, you can actually build parking, et cetera, into the right of way, correct? So how does that, I mean, if you're building in the right of way with a building, what's the difference between that and a vault?
So, yeah, my understanding is IBC currently does allow the space underneath the sidewalk behind the curb to be designed and built on. What PBOT is actually looking to do, and we don't have this ready to take before you guys today, but to also consider leasing that area of the public right-of-way rather than giving it outright as a permit. So that's something we've been working on.
Generally, our practice is if their parking garage extends out underneath the sidewalk areas, it is set at a depth of at least 5 feet to allow the utilities to be placed there or show us a design from the other utilities that they can be accommodated someplace else.
So is the leasing strategy to create a fund to offset costs that people are incurring trying to get around vaults that are in the right-of-way, or is it a revenue source, or I guess...
I think part of it is I think part of it is to encourage the consideration on private property. Another part of it is to deal with the fairness issue of locating private facilities in the public right of way, which again is what we're moving towards in PBOT, to really look to the uses that we allow or that people use the right-of-way for to do a lease if it's for a sole entity, for a sole use, a private use, rather than a broader public use. So that's the direction that we've been moving in. So it's for the consistency.
In addition to that, the franchise utilities, they pay their franchise fees to the city, and they're based upon, it's negotiated, but there's a lot of different ways. And one of those is, how much infrastructure you have in the right-of-way. And so they're paying, when they put a vault in, they're paying on their share, if you will, to have that vault placed there. And so this gets back to the fairness and so how we treat the right-of-way in general, it becomes more consistent with that as well.
I would assume you've checked with the city attorney about leasing right-of-ways, and it doesn't trigger any. If I lease that right of way, it's only for the use specifically of that vault and no other use whatsoever.
Yes, we've been engaging the city attorney's office in the leasing of the right of way subsurface, generally, to the curb, into the street for basement vaults and whatnot.
Yeah. I applaud the wish to get everybody at the table sooner. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah. Part of the reason for the lease is often due to the lender's need to have the security that right is there. Very often we have property ownership change, and we'll get a call from the lender saying, how do I have that certainty for the next 33 years or 66 years that parking structure is going to stay. You're not going to take that away from my building that I'm trying to write a loan against. So that lease gives them that certainty of time to be in that space.
That's a good point. That actually has come up on a couple of cases where there was a permit before and the lender, they sold the building and the new lender was not satisfied with the permanency of a permit because it's got a revocable clause in it. And so a lease can also be terminated, but it's got a more permanent aspect to it. So generally, lenders are more satisfied with, say, a 30-year lease.
Is there a limit to the extent of vaults that one could install? Or how would you limit it, or do you, or have you thought about that?
We haven't. I mean, that has come up. You know, are we talking about a size that we would allow?
Mm-hmm.
We've gone away from that because generally, I mean, vaults are expensive to put in the ground, and they're expensive in itself. So I think it would be self-limiting if how much somebody wants to use the right-of-way of that. And then, as Christine talked about, we're talking about this lease program of potentially leasing the right-of-way there anyways. So if someone wanted to lease the whole area and have this in there, that would be okay as well. But we're talking about the smaller vault area of just, I think it would be self-limiting for what somebody would want to pay to privatize the right-of-way.
Where I get concerned is if, 30 years from now when we have plug-in rocket sleds or whatever strange thing that none of us can imagine today.
Right. Yep.
All of a sudden you have a metal sidewalk because whatever this new technology is, you know, begins to use a whole bunch of energy. I'm thinking not just today. Obviously,
right.
You're here before us today, I would assume, because there's been an increase in adding more vaults. And so I'm wondering what's the next uptick and how does what you're doing apply to a broader sense of, you know, limiting that per block face or something like that so that it it somehow contains it.
Well, it seems like there's two things. That one is the type 1 vault. I don't know that I've ever encountered that where it's shared by multiple properties. And particularly not in a new project. You're not going to get that, I wouldn't think. And then what happens when part of the block is redeveloped and you've got a shared vault and you've got a new vault for the new project, but it's part of the old vault. And so it gets complicated pretty quickly when over time, like you're talking about, Ted, when things change. And then most of the project, most of the projects that we see are of a larger scale, and a lot of projects are in sites that are previously undeveloped.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're new, but they weren't there before. And there was no development before. All the Pearl projects, well, most of them, South Waterfront, et cetera.
Right. This rule does not preclude, when we talk about a type 1 vault, that is a vault for the transmission. Nothing. So, for example, if PGE came in to serve your building, but they also had a need in that area for their facilities to run their transmission system, that vault would then be a type 1 in the sense that it would have PGE facilities in there, but then they would serve the building for that purpose. So okay. It would be a shared that sense.
So it's not that type of vault. It doesn't have any privatization on it. It's part of the utility company's vault.
It's part of the, okay. Exactly. And so
we're really talking about type 2 vaults only.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
All right. And so you had a good slide that illustrated the kind of negative impact on the built environment with vaults, et cetera, going into buildings. So I would think that is something that we would be very, very concerned about is the difficulty in two ways of kind of mitigating that if it wasn't in the right-of-way and then having it more difficult for it to be in the right-of-way, which would then automatically push it onto properties. So I guess that would be a concern for us. Or for me, I should say.
Well, actually, the slide is titled "Ideal Location of Utilities." So
the what?
For our perspective.
From your perspective, that's the ideal.
Certainly, we acknowledge that there are issues with this from a design perspective, from a life of the street perspective. We get that. I mean, you know, from a strictly transportation's perspective, this works better for us. But we know there's a balance there for all the needs and everybody else's use. Right. So,
in your list of kind of shall do's with the new type 2, it was flush with the property line, so it basically gets out of the tree.
Exactly.
And then into the pedestrian
the
zone.
Exactly.
At that point.
Okay. Try to get it as close to the building so we have that area to put hydrants and street
right.
trees and
right.
canary poles and what have you in
okay.
that area.
That makes sense. So if would also, I mean, I think also it seems logical to have the, I think we've all probably slipped on the metal grates from even new ones and later ones when it's wet out. So I think a more tactile and integrated surface makes sense too.
Yeah.
Right?
Great. Should I have Kurt up? Are we
sure.
ready for that? Are you guys through with the presentation? Sure. Great. Okay. I have Kurt Schultz from Sarah Architects here who did want to make a statement. Okay. And if there's anyone else that wants to, there are yellow cards in the back of the room. Fill them out. Give them to Paige over here in the corner and she'll hand them to me. So
And just quickly before, that's fine. Before Kurt starts, I neglected to mention in the packet of information you have, there are five letters in support of BDS's perspective on vaults. Killian Pacific, CE John, Greenlight, Sarah, and GBD. Just wanted to note those in case.
Are they in support? I thought they were in.
In support of BDS's perspective.
Oh, yes, okay.
Hi, I'm Kurt Schultz, principal with Sarah Architects. Let's see, what's our address again? 338 Northwest 5th Avenue, 97209. Hate to get in the middle of all this, but we definitely wanted to give our perspective. Both our architecture department and our urban design and planning department have concerns, particularly about the type 2 vaults and their discouragement, I suppose, in the public right of way and what that does to the pedestrian realm. And we know that if that probably goes forward, we'll be bringing you guys a lot of things you're going to hate. We don't like to get yelled at, so we'll see if we can talk about it now. We have a number of projects right now in the central city, and as you all know, most of the sites in the central city are probably half blocks or quarter blocks. There's some full blocks, but a lot of them are smaller. And we don't love vaults, and I definitely understand that. However, the alternatives we think from a pedestrian experience are even worse, such that say we have a quarter block, and I've got a couple quarter blocks we're doing right now in town where if you can't do a transformer type 2 vault in the public right of way, and we are forced to put it onto the owner's property, we either have to notch the building back quite a bit to do a transformer that's sitting on a pad, which is a very suburban location. We all know we hate that, and that's not something we don't want to see downtown. We can put a vault, put our own vault on our own property line, but that also means you still have to notch the building back a significant way, so you get big notches in the pedestrian experience to allow that to happen. Unless you have a big site with a plaza and no parking underneath, that's not really possible. Or finally, you go to the enclosed room with the doors. And frankly, we've looked at this in a number of projects. They're quite sizable. And really what it means is we're having to take active public space on the street and turning that over to a internal fireproof room that has 3-hour walls and explosion-proof walls and then utility doors that open right to the sidewalk. Right now, I've got a quarter block project, whereas if this is something we have to do, we end up losing, retail space or a unit or active space for a large room that might be 15 by 20 feet with a very tall ceiling. This all just dead space on the sidewalk. So I think our concerns are the discouragement of type 2 vaults in the public right of way. We have we don't love vaults either, and we have no problem with having better vault lids. I have no objection to that, but I think having a vault is still, from the pedestrian experience, a better solution than the other three that I just described, because I know when we bring those to you, you guys are not going to be pleased with what we're bringing to you. So I just wanted to state our concerns for the record. Thank you.
Great. Other questions?
I have one.
Go ahead.
Kurt, with transformers, do they have to be within a certain distance of the property line?
They all have to be close to the property line, typically, mm-hmm. yes, because the PGE or the utility usually needs to have direct access to those. So they're usually not buried somewhere.
Right.
Same with the vault, needs to be close to the property line, or even the enclosed room have to have doors adjacent to the property line.
That's what I thought.
Thanks. Well, don't they also prefer within 20 feet or something for their crane to pick it up,
right,
pick up the
correct.
Transformers and all. How
right.
do you pick one out of the horizontally? I haven't done a project like
out
that.
Out of a vault or
like the ones they showed that were in the
building? Oh, actually, I have no idea
okay.
how you get those out. But, even for smaller buildings like a quarter block building, you still need a room about that size. Mm-hmm. You see there on the ASA, which was a full block building, they're quite large. Just a lot of dead space
sure.
on the side
sure.
on the
yep.
headway. So,
yep.
yeah. Thank you.
Thanks.
Oh, actually, I have one more quick question for you. The process that was described here today, where you fill out an online application to put your vault on the sidewalk and then get a letter from the utility, is that the same process you understood coming here today did you understand that that was available to you? Like, there's a way to do it, but there's some hurdles.
Right, right. I think what we're concerned about is if the change is adopted, that really does discourage the Type 2 vaults. That if they're only approved on certain special circumstances, and you don't even know going in whether they may be approved or not, it's going to take some time to find out. That's what we're concerned about, especially as we're, and right now, with this being kind of up in the air, we have probably a half dozen downtown projects where we're kind of confused of whether a vault will be okay or whether this is going to be adopted and we can't do it. We need to change the design, and so
right,
it's...
Right, okay. Independent of that,
yeah.
Does that process feel onerous to you?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay. All right, thanks.
Kurt, before you leave, just get that perspective. I will probably ask this question, but leasing the right-of-way, I would assume a nominal fee or a reasonable fee would be expected. I don't know what that is, but with the owners you're working with now, is that?
Well, I'm sure I can't speak for them. I would imagine they wouldn't like it, but sure. they'd have to be here in the room to say something about it.
Right.
There's also right now, you were talking about building under the sidewalks. We often do parking right. under the sidewalks, and you sign a revocable permit mm-hmm. with PBOT to do that. Same sometimes with transformer vaults that we build. We've done that as well, mm-hmm. And you sign a revocable permit. The leasing question, I would need to defer to the developers.
And any problem with early coordination to get
no.
in? Like, would that be, I would assume that might be at the pre-app then, wouldn't it?
Exactly.
It seems like that would make sense.
And right now what we're hearing at pre-app is that vaults may not be allowed, but this kind of may language is very confusing.
Okay.
So we'd like
sure.
some certainty.
Okay.
Right. I mean, presumably at that pre-app, should this go through, everyone at the table could really take a good look at what vaults are already on
yep.
the street and have a conversation about really is it reasonable
Absolutely.
To put a vault in the sidewalk or not, and would one have a reasonable expectation if one applied for one?
Yeah, I think that would be great.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Any other questions of Kurt Schultz?
Not for Kurt, but for staff.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks,
great.
Kurt.
Thanks. I have actually one more card that just came. Ed Gorman from PGE is here. It doesn't say whether you wanted to make a statement, but it looks like you might.
I didn't want to. I just want to. Ed Gorman, I'm with PGE and the Service and Design Project Manager Lead. And I just wanted to address a number of things here. One, that PGE strongly supports the early design aspect of this, as Christine and Alex and Kurt have so eloquently stated. There are a lot of problems when we get contacted at the last minute. In fact, I had two phone calls today about Block 43, and I have not seen anything from anybody, but there is a firehouse sense of urgency to get that resolved. And I've done dozens of these buildings, all the South Waterfront, a lot of the Pearl around Portland State, and these are 6 to 9 to 12 month development of the plans. And so it's kind of a concern to us that this thing seems to be a fire. You know, there's a real urgency to ramrod this through. Secondly, I want to address the situation with the lift-out slabs. There's a trade-off with lift-out slabs versus metal doors. A trade-off is a loss of power for a factor of 2 to 3 to 4 times what you would normally express with the steel doors. The hinge doors allow our crews to go to a site, readily access the facility without having to call or wait for a crane to show up, and then deal with the rusted out, lift out mechanisms in the door, or they're broken. The grouting is bad. So in this, I'm not going to go to how valuable electricity is to our society across a broad spectrum here with the economy. Everything we've got is tied to electricity, but and people are very concerned about having their power on all the time. But when we've had conversations with PBOT over the years about lift-out slabs, and we have a PUC that's very interested in our outage times and duration. We actually get fines when we exceed a certain level. We have acceptable levels that we have to maintain of reliability for our customers. So going to lift-out slabs not only puts us potentially out of compliance with the PUC, but it also causes a huge headache for our customers by lengthening the times that they're out. Their cash registers aren't turning. this building would be out of business if we had an outage out front here and we had to go wait for a crane to show up. So I don't want to discount that. We've researched over the last 10 years in the city of Portland, we have had zero claims about an injury on a metal door that belongs to PGE. We continually hear about how slippery they are. Being a deep pockets entity, I would suspect that if anybody felt they had a legitimate claim, that we would have experienced submittal of that claim, and we have not. I've researched that with our claims department. In terms of those Class A vaults, we're very open to putting the transformers in the basement level, parking level down. You could reduce all of that frontage to maybe a 12 by 14 dimensioned area that would have a door that could we could drop our transformers down in, and the room would, down there would support the transformation for the building. So you can really reduce the presence at the street level of the access for the utility. If a crane were required, we'd need a minimum 20-foot tall space, but we've got buildings, 12th and Burnside over here, the Four Square project, where you can put lifting eyes or beams in the ceiling that allow us to get the transformers up, move them out to where then a crane can attach them. So I just wanted to address some of the concerns that came up here from the utility point of view and share that with you. Any questions for me?
Could you describe that? You said 12 by 4. Can you run through that scenario again that you just described?
Well,
I'm
saying that the space we would need, the vault, the transformers we have for this large project, like South Waterfront, require a 6 by 8 opening to drop the transformers in. The industry transformers require that. That's their dimensions. So if they were to go in the first level down, we need 3 feet of clear space around for our guys to work on an apron or a collar around the opening. And then you get 3 and 3 and 6 and 3 and 3 and 8, you're 12 by 14. We have a space where our personnel could get in and work around the opening to drop the transformers to the next level down where all of the 3, 4, 5 transformers that are needed to serve the building could be housed. And so we don't have to have them at street level, but we need to have the access entry at street level.
Could you have a combination lid where it was, cement? In other words, place your transformers in the vault. You have a partial cement lid and then a hatch that allows for service. That was metal, so your workers could get into it on a regular basis, and the only need for removal of the transformer, then you'd have to pull up the lid.
Well, reality is our transformer vaults very seldom need maintenance.
Okay.
It's our switching vaults, the transmission vaults that have been alluded to, that they need the regular maintenance where we're going in and switching feeders back and forth to keep our system operational.
Okay.
The transformer vaults are very benign in terms of maintenance. But when they do need maintenance, the lights are out in the building and everybody's inconvenienced and the cash register's not turning and whatever else,
Yep.
And so those are critical for us
in.
To get in and get them back power back on.
Other questions of Mr. Gorman? All right. Thank you. Thank you for being
Thank
here today.
You.
All right. If there's not any other testifiers on this particular briefing today, I guess we should gather up our thoughts and comments for PBOT and BDS. I have a quick question for Kara. So, Kara, can you kind of describe what BDS's ideal outcome might be?
A couple things. First, PBOT's policy saying placing these pieces of equipment in the right-of-way is discouraged. I think that's strong language, maybe saying it's a consideration. Some other language to accept that we'll see more of these and we'll allow more of these and help these happen more easily. So maybe looking at the language. It was nice to hear Ed talk about minimizing the street presence and going through a smaller opening, a 12 by 14. So maybe researching that more with some of the designers and some of the buildings right now that are struggling to figure out how to deal with this. What are those repercussions? I mean, I think, you know, worst case scenario, what we're looking at right now, this impacts zoning code and design guidelines, so it's going to be really hard for us to, if we see more of these, it's going to be really hard for us to deal with this challenge, frankly. I guess that one thing that came to me with this idea of a smaller room off the street and then a vault down into the basement, I would like to see if that that vault down into the basement could actually be within the loading area. You got to do loading anyway. Mm-hmm. So can we put this all together and schedule the maintenance and PGE's visit when loading isn't happening within the building, which is a lot of the time of most days anyway. So that could be a really nice scenario where it's all in one room that's required by code anyway. You know, I don't know how much we really should participate in figuring out a lease amount. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's our role, but I'd just like to see if that's where we go, conversations with the developers in town on, you know, what's reasonable so that you can accept it and pay the lease without sending you, you know, straight to inside your building. So having that deeper conversation with a reasonable fee would be really nice. Those are my quick hits right now.
Okay. Thanks. Any other questions?
Well, I just, Kara, one of your points, to integrate with a loading dock. I know we've seen some projects that don't even have loading docks, like
right.
the McDonald housing project.
Yeah.
In Old Town, it was a very mid-block project. It had a frontage of 75 feet or something, very, very small. So if you were to take a percentage of that project and have to donate, you know, basically hand it over to a back-of-house function, you lose a large percentage of your face there.
If I remember that correctly, that building did have some...
It had a gas meter. Just integrating the gas meter was a challenge.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, it's the same thing. I feel like the size of the project should be factored in because you can see a larger project can potentially accommodate it, but even a good example to me is a bad example.
Yeah. Because that's a block.
That's a
block,
block
large project, isn't it? As well as the other one, right? That's a housing project in Pearl. Yeah,
both of them are full blocks. This one.
Everybody's so used to seeing the vaults on the sidewalk, they almost go away.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think that they should be surfaced in a similar material, but it just seems like the detrimental effect it has to a building to have the room right there because of where the transformer needs to be located, it's really a negative. I mean, I haven't seen that done well yet.
Right, it sounds like the biggest inconvenience is that you're getting a bunch of stuff under the sidewalk and it's trying to compete with one another.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't have an issue with vaults on the sidewalk. I have much less of an issue with vaults on the sidewalk than I do with them on the street face. Rather walk on them than have to walk by them. But it sounds like the bigger issue is that conflict, so I guess that early conversation.
Is that resolved to some degree as the vaults are moved adjacent to the property line?
Yes, to some degree, I think it would be. I mean, that early conversation, you could factor that into design if they have to be there. You know, certainly what we've heard here, you know, we'll take back the information and the discouragement, you know, that word in the comment, we can certainly take that out. We're not saying no to having them in the sidewalk area. We're just saying let's have the conversation early. And they can be accommodated somewhere else. Let's do that. If they can't, here's an option. But at a cost, and we're certainly sensitive to the cost of a lease because we don't want it to be so prohibitive that we have, you know, other areas that are impacted because of that. So we'll come back and we can talk about what that lease is.
Well, I mean, a range just to talk about money.
So we looked at different scenarios. I mean, we haven't finalized this yet, but one of the things we looked at was, and I don't have the numbers completely in my head, but what comes to mind was the highest one that we saw in all the different scenarios was about $2,500 in the downtown core area.
Is that per what?
Per year?
Right.
Right. So we had our right-of-way manager go through some scenarios based on five locations using a 200 square foot vault. So downtown, I think it was right across from our building. What's the expected lease amount for that? And it was $2,500. All the other scenarios that he ran throughout the city are less than $2,500. So that gives you a sense of how much it would be per year. Yeah.
For the lifetime of the building.
For the lifetime of the building. Similar to, you know, sky bridges or balconies or, you know, other things.
We don't lease out balconies, do we?
We don't lease out
balconies.
No, not balconies.
Not yet.
Things that are not aerial windows, but are floor space.
Right. Okay.
I don't know what to call that anymore.
Okay.
If I can add one thing about the design exception concern that Sarah Architects brought up. Part of the reason for the early engagement is so that we can look and consider whether or not a design exception is warranted for that location. They're pretty quick turnarounds. Generally, they don't take any more than 2 weeks. So that is why we want to have the early engagement, so we can give a yes or a no to developers, architects, and the utility companies.
So what's the scenario for a no answer then?
Let me think here. Some things that have challenged us.
Mr. No is coming up.
Yeah. Some things that have challenged us recently on Southwest Harrison Street, right over here, the light rail is being constructed. There's properties that have setback, and there's a transformer currently on a site, and the building. The site was going to redevelop with, again, a setback, and the property owner, I think, just wanted to have the transformer within the right-of-way. And it's a high-use sidewalk corridor with a new light rail station, also with other service vaults for utilities, for gas, and whatnot. So that's where we pushed back and said, you know, this is not an appropriate location for this. Generally, it's not a no. It's generally, let's work to come up with a different solution. There was another site out by Southeast 92nd where we had a transformer on site at a cul-de-sac, and it involved some dedication from the property, and the transformer had been in the dedicated area. They wanted to keep it in the dedicated area, the newly dedicated area upon redevelopment, and there was adequate space on site to accommodate it. So I think we said no to that one. So those are just two examples that come to mind. Do you have other examples?
Not to develop a reputation of no. I'm thinking of opportunities where we would probably engage the commissioner design review staff, for example, the building right here. On the bus mall, it's got the interior plaza. It's got landscaping plaza space that feels much like a landscape sidewalk area. We're going to push back and say, why can't that go in that? I mean, if you're going to have a below-ground vault in the sidewalk and you've got a plaza internal to your building, why can't we start the conversation there to say, put that private need on your private property? If you're going to use the same material on this public street, why not start there? So it's not a no. It's why can't that work first before we go use the public space for that?
Is that process, so when you say design exception, is that new language that you're introducing, or is that sort of?
No, that's current on language that we have. The design
that's
exceptions.
Language you have now?
Yeah.
Okay. Does it change in some way then that you're more kind of naturally would lean towards having them out of the right of way then? Is that? Does it change anything?
That's what the proposed rule does for the vaults that are just serving a single property. It provides a hierarchy in the rule to say you can't get to this point until you go through all these things. Design exception is one of the tools we currently use, but there's a process and that you have to go through, and a consideration on property that is stronger than what we've had in the past.
So,
Sorry. I was just going to say, based on Kurt's comments about clarity and consistency, I guess one of the fears of any developer is the bureaucratic kind of rabbit hole they can go down at times and maybe never come out the other end. What I guess that just kind of Kurt's concern about clarity and consistency and other developments, and if it's on a one case-by-case basis, then how do you get consistency? How do you get clarity?
I absolutely understand the need for predictability and quick turnaround times. Right. Where these vaults are coming into play are usually type two or three land use reviews that have a series of steps to them. So by having that early conversation with PGE or PP&L at the pre-app, getting the utility companies involved, putting them on notice of the pre-apps, getting that engagement, and then getting that design exception submitted, as, I mean, that could happen within a week or two of the pre-app happening, well in advance of the design review application even being submitted. So we're not looking at something that's going to come in and delay for months and months that's going to influence the permit timelines of the project. Get that question out there and answered up front early on. And I think it helps you guys as you're working on the design, the facade of the building.
Sure.
You know, if we know where electrical vaults are and electrical rooms are, and that influences other elements of the building and changes that, that's better information we can bring to you guys as you're doing your reviews.
Well, it also seems, just after hearing things, my reaction is that it's, if the vaults are pushed to the adjacent to the property, that clears a lane between the vaults and the tree line, amenity line, then it seems like it's a design problem about the cover, you know, how to make it visually appealing and so that it integrates into the surrounding environment, easy access for PG, et cetera, and then some kind of tactile safe quality to it. So it seems like a design problem at that point, not a administrative problem. I don't know.
I would agree. We have, you know, I know Kara had said about the letters and support of the BDS piece, and I don't have those for the record here, but I certainly can bring those. But we have letters from the utility companies, and PP&L, for example, has supported both the early engagement.
Sure.
As well as the concrete lift-out lids, that they don't have an issue with that because they of the tactile and the matching of the existing surroundings. So there are ways to do this. It's just more of a conversation that needs to continue to happen.
Sure. Sure. I think the critical part is just requiring early access. I'm kind of stunned to hear that people have waited so long to coordinate such a basic.
Wait, I have to get power to this building? I didn't know that.
Yeah, it seems kind of odd. Not just a little odd.
Yeah.
Really odd. Anyway.
Part of what you need, too, is you need the franchise utility to be really responsive up front. When you call to have someone come and talk to you about your project, you can't wait for weeks and weeks and weeks for that to happen.
Right.
And that sometimes is something that can cause just – that's why teams
– Well, and that you need a letter.
Yeah. So
– right.
And that's the part of it that's a little bit, I get how it's a private use, but
yeah.
It's only kind of a private use because it's your transformer, but it doesn't really feel like your transformer the way that the utilities treat it. It's like you got to put it where they want it with exactly the kind of clearances that it's theirs.
Yeah.
You're buying it and it's theirs. And so it's really their requirements that drive where this thing ends up. And I think characterizing it sort of that it's just the private owner with their transformer, like why are they would love to put it somewhere else, but it's not up to them. They don't get to decide. It's up to PGE or so. I think there's a response. I think it's not true to character to say it's these teams kind of waiting around forever.
Right.
They're trying to like go through getting the franchises to the table too. So
I have a hand waving, since this is a briefing with the permission of the commission. I mean, Mr. Gorman would like to follow up with something, so with your permission, you can ask him to come back. Well, come on up and to a microphone. I need to get you on tape.
Okay.
Thanks.
I would like to directly address that comment, which is I've done dozens of these over years, and we immediately respond
to the project, and as soon as we get plans and load information, we immediately begin the process to develop the design. And we work with the design team, albeit very late in the process, to find a location that works for both the customer, the city, and the utility. And we have codes we have to abide by, and we have issues with entry into the building. We have engineering challenges. We have operation challenges, and those are all factors in the design for a service to a property. So I'll stand on that.
So let me ask you a question, unless you want to respond.
Well, I think the point I'm making is that I think we need to not just put all the blame sort of on these design teams sort of waiting to the last minute. I mean, the fact is there are lots of players that are involved in trying to figure this stuff out.
Not blaming anyone. We're strongly endorsing the early engagement, which has not been the experience we've had. Again, I've done dozens of these.
Yeah. I think it's perfect. It's great.
And Alex showed a slide up there of a vault place on Abernathy Street, and I have not seen a shred of paper on that block. And that is typical of how these projects have gone. I did all the Central District of South Waterfront from the backbone to every building that's down there, and numerous buildings in the Pearl, and they're always late to the party. So, and as Christine said, I go through the public notices on the BDS website regularly. I note projects that look like they warrant detailed early on engagement, and I send a letter. I call the BDS plan reviewer. I've talked to her, and I send letters to the architects and, if I can, to the owner, encouraging them to respond to us. And I'll tell you, my response is not real great. So.
Yeah.
Just leave it.
So if we're trying to flip that formula around and everyone else is late to the party, then the pre-app becomes a little soiree. That then are you able to join in that and give some clarity? Because when you've got 30 people in a pre-app for a large project, you're going through every city department is starting to give input. And then it would be great for you to be at that table, or if you're serving that site, whoever's serving that site, be there to kind of talk with PBOT and the team and your own concerns. Because at that point, no one's got electrical loads on a building yet. So
we would embrace the opportunity to participate to the best of our abilities at that time.
That's almost clear.
I don't know how else to say it.
Well, the best of your ability could be, well, I can't make it then. And so that's what we're asking. Is that something that's in your...
Well, let's try it.
Okay.
Okay?
That's what.
So far, we haven't had that experience.
Okay.
So and I think we don't have a record.
I think there's an easy solution, or partial solution to this. Mm-hmm. I think I'm going to speak to my friends in BDS that I think just putting them on the email list for upcoming pre-apps
right.
is going to cover
yes.
a significant number of these, just so there's an early
right.
heads up and flagging
right.
on this. And to be fair to the projects, it's hard to be spending a lot of money on consultants before you're anywhere near a design on the building. So when
right.
you're trying to get your electrical engineer,
right.
your civil engineer,
right.
your geotech engineer all on board, and then bring them to a room and sit around for an hour and a half at those billing rates.
Mm-hmm.
I understand why there's a desire to push that out.
Sure.
But if we can force that conversation early, then we can deal with a lot of the timing issues that are showing up.
Right.
And to echo that, you know, as we were rolling this out, we were getting comments before, I mean, bringing this before you. I personally went out to PGE, PPNL, Quest, Northwest Natural, and asked that same question. You know, we're talking about early engagement. Are you going to be at the table?
Right.
And every company said, you know, they will, to their best of the ability, be at that table because it helps them in the long run to have that conversation early.
Right.
So they've all engaged and they've all committed that as well.
Good.
Yeah. Well, and I think for the design team and committing the electrical engineer to that early meeting, it's probably going to save fee when you're scrambling, mm-hmm. trying to figure out where to put the vault at 90%. So, I mean, yeah.
What is the, Ed, right now, what's the, and just to be clear, it wasn't, you hadn't made the comment, somebody else had made the comment about teams and delaying, didn't come from you. What is the process right now with PGE? If I had a site and I was contemplating, you know, doing a building,
What's the procedure to get a meeting right now with a PGE representative to review a vault or talk about a potential vault location? Is it just a phone call or?
Yeah, I mean, the protocol is to contact our service coordinators and go through, you know, the litany of submittals. The reality is I've done so many of these that a lot of people know, and they'll just call, and then we'll talk about it. They'll send in whatever they can, 30% or preliminary, and I mean that's, and we can get a conversation going. And we're herding cats all the time. There's a multitude of these projects going all the time, and we're understaffed. I'm not looking for sympathy, and that's where, but I'm just saying, yeah, give us a call and we'll engage.
Yeah, I think that would be, if you're looking for more involvement, I think it's a great idea to get Quest, you know, PGE, to get the players at the table. It might be looking at, is there anything different we could do with that kind of front-end procedure, the kind of submittals, the litany of submittals you just mentioned, that could just sort of shortcut that and just get, you know, and it's a staff issue, it's a time issue, and they've got to have people available to do it. And so I get all that, but I'm just saying those are the hurdles that are out there right now. There's time that it takes to sort of do the series of submittals, and you know, it's not just a phone call, it's more than that right now. And I think that's part of what leads to time passing before we can get things decided. Right.
Just real quickly, there's been talk about moving the vaults closer to the building. Really, the vaults are of a dimension that they take up the whole from the foundation to the curb. They're 10 feet long, 10 feet wide, 24 feet long, and 10 feet deep. What you're really talking about is the access to the vault. It's not the vault, it's the access to the vault. So I just want to clarify that.
Mm-hmm. And is that a standard size then? I mean, is that
for the larger buildings that we're seeing now that in the core area, they usually require at least two transformers. The big transformers, most of them are four, and you can get two of those transformers in a 1024 vault, which is those dimensions. And some of the buildings get by with one. Block 49 got by with one. Block 46, I think, got by with one. The rest of them down there all have two. So it depends on the scale of your building, but the vaults themselves are enormous, and the conversation really is the access to the.
And how large is the access panel?
Again, it's 6x8. It's a single access, and that's what, in order to get the transformers in and out, that's what you need is a 6x8 access. Mm-hmm. And as long as I got the microphone, your outage, you're going to be inconvenient. I know PP&L endorses lift-out slabs, or they don't care, but for us operationally, it's a nightmare, and for the customer, for their convenience, it's a nightmare. So just keep that in mind. We're trying to serve our customers.
I found it very interesting when you said you'd had no claims at all. I mean, I've slipped, but I haven't thought of suing you, of course. But
okay, well.
It run through my mind for just a second.
Yeah.
Well, but no damage, so it passed quickly. But it's really amazing.
And most of our doors have the rose on them. So you may have slipped on somebody else's.
Oh, okay. Maybe. Well, it was an old one, I think. Too.
Yeah.
There you go.
Right.
Thank you.
Somebody's.
Absolutely. Thank you for coming. Okay. We need to wrap up. We have a couple more cases coming here. So comments.
I just want to underline what Kara said. I thought it's a brilliant idea. Any project that's big enough that it's required to have a loading space and it has the loading space is taking up. There's one right there. Mm-hmm. If you could put the lid, you could put the access in the floor of that. For the vault, like whatever the hurdles are to doing that, if you could get that out of the way, that would
be
huge.
Can you drive
huge.
Over it, I guess, would be the question. Yeah, but that is a good spot.
I think you're probably going to have some design issues around driving over those diamond-plated lids from a structural standpoint, so then you're going to be driving the lift-out slab. I don't know.
Well, you could have the lift-out slab in there then.
Let's take a look at that, because I like that idea too.
Yeah.
Right. Well, certainly, I mean, some form of ganging things together in a loading zone, whether it's putting the access directly under the wheels of the moving van, I don't know. But, you know, consolidating is always good. Other comments?
And in the open space that you mentioned could work,
I support BDS's position.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't want to have any language in there that precludes the right of way. I mean, the way it is now, and it seems to work, I think it for me, it just it seems like it's a like I said, a design issue relative to the vaults and with no claims too. That's kind of amazing. But everything else, I think the early coordination is a key
that's
thing,
key.
A key improvement that would make probably smooth a lot of these things out. Yeah.
And on that, real quick, our plan is to get contact names or emails or whatever we need added to our pre-app list. We have a mailing list that go to the same organizations for every pre-app, same with design advice requests, and then probably our type 3 notices. But by then, hopefully, we've been talking already. But that's we're meeting with the notification group next week to go over those lists. And we'll call the companies to get the right names or the right departments in case people retire or whatever. We need these notices to go to the right place.
Okay. Any other comments? And what I heard today is we're in support of perhaps not using the word discouragement, but explaining to people that there is an extra hurdle to get over if they want to use the right of way. I think it's a great idea to add the utilities to the pre-app conference and to get them there whenever possible. And it sounded like I heard from Commissioner Work, we're pro keeping the right of way as a possibility and very much in favor of early engagement overall. So, I mean, those seem like positive changes. I mean, in terms of concrete door versus metal versus, I mean, I bet you there's not a hue and cry to develop better vault doors out there. I'm sure there's not some young, fresh designer thinking up the tomorrow's super strong plastic vault door, but
might be his avenue to fame.
But if anyone out there wants to work on it, sounds like there's a niche. So anyway, thanks for bringing the issue to us, and good luck getting it just right. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you.
Design problem.